Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patrone. Well, today is Veterans Day, a day we honor those who have fought for our country, a day we remember even the dead, a day we remember everyone that put on the uniform and went to do battle to preserve our way of life. I had a unique experience today, a moving one. I did not make the parade. I must confess, I did not make the Veterans Day parade here in Key West. What I did go to, though, at 11 this morning, was a groundbreaking ceremony for a Vietnam memorial in our park here in Bayview Park. Yes, the people of Key West are erecting a memorial to the veterans and those who participated in the Vietnam War. It was an impressive situation. There were about 200 veterans, I would estimate, there. And you have to appreciate these men are not young kids anymore. They all had to be at least 60, some into their early 70s. They walked proudly about. A couple tried to put on the uniforms, but the stomach was a little large. Most of them were just dressed as they would normally here, whether in jeans and a sports shirt or shorts and a sports shirt. They were proud of what they did. Those who had medals had their medals on their chest on a sports shirt. Some wore the hats that they wore while they were in the military. Many had the beret like the Green Berets do and were wearing those. Others were wearing Veterans of Foreign Wars type caps. I was impressed because I lived through the Vietnam War. I was older. I was a good 10 years older than those who were participating in the war. I can remember. I already had a practice established, and I had four children. It was a bad war. No one liked the Vietnam War. I can't explain why, but everyone was anti the Vietnam War. No one supported the thing. And here we were sending soldiers to die. We did not have a professional army. It was the draft. Parents of college-age students, some of them my friends, some of them my clients, were sending their children to Canada to avoid the draft, a crime in and of itself. And these young kids who now became adults could not return till I think it was President Jimmy Carter who issued a declaration that none of them would be held responsible and they could all return home. So no one liked this war. And people protested, but not protests like we have today. These were normal, civilized protests with adults and young people. I saw doctors and lawyers and college professors much older than me walking down the street, the main street of our community. There was no window breaking or anything like that. And the college students also walked in a straight line with them. None of this disturbance type situation that goes on with today's protests. And I was shocked when the people started protesting because, you know, I remember World War II. And it was an item of pride for you to serve, and it was an item of pride for the family that their child was serving. But that didn't exist in the Vietnam War. No one liked the war. No one wanted their kids to go. So when these people came back from the war, the soldiers, the men and women who fought for the United States in Vietnam, they were not welcomed here. Nobody said, good job. Glad you're home. Was it difficult? We felt bad for you. We worried about you. We prayed for you. No, you know how they were greeted? Either quietly or many were spit upon, actually spit upon. That's how much the people in this country didn't understand the war or agree with it. And instead of punishing the politicians, they punished the soldiers when they returned. I could never understand that. Well, anyhow, today was their day. They're getting a memorial. They deserve the memorial. They are the forgotten group because no one liked that war again, and they were honored today, and you could see the pride in their faces that they were finally being acknowledged. It was a very moving thing. I stood in the shade of a tree, And I watched, and I couldn't help but have a tear come to my eye on occasion as I looked into the faces of these men and women. Okay, we're going to Princeton University now. By the way, if you want to call in, the number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. A new Princeton study came out today. Now, Princeton is a very conservative university, an Ivy League school, well-respected institution, always number one or number two in the rankings every year as to the quality of the education available, quality of the teaching staff, etc. Princeton came out with a new study today. The study was done by Martin Galenz and Benjamin I. Page. And the study, I've got to tell you, was bad news for American democracy. The study said American democracy no longer exists. American democracy no longer exists. The study said people no longer rule. Over the past few decades, and they say this started sometime in the 1980s, the American political system was transformed from a democracy into an oligarchy. Now, we hear this term oligarchy quite a bit in recent months, and it means that the wealthy rule, the wealthy elite rule, the real big shots with the billions of dollars. They are ruling this country. This is what the study said. They're well-connected, the rich, and they direct and they steer the direction of our country, okay? And it's immaterial what the will of the majority is. They do what they want as they think the country should go and their pocketbook should go, and the people be damned, okay? Now, the study further suggested, it stated, not suggested, that the average citizen has little or no power. You know, who we sent to Washington doesn't mean diddly-dip. These guys control Washington, whether it's Democrat or Republican. I raised the question, what do we do now? We know this. We didn't need a study to tell us. We've seen many of our freedoms, and we've seen democracy as we knew it slip away. We've seen our middle class go down the tubes. This country is only working for the 1%, the very rich. It doesn't work for 99%. I don't care that the market is thriving, the stock market, and that wages for certain people like bankers are at all-time highs, bonuses $20, $30, $40 million. Would you believe there are some people in this country earning billions of dollars a year? Yes, they're getting paid billions of dollars a year. What do we do? I don't know. We've got to take back the country. I don't know how we do it. But you can't keep screwing a people. At some point, the people are going to get upset, and then bad things could happen. And the 99% are getting screwed in this country. Now, one of the things we're unhappy about, or I'm unhappy about, with regard to my country, and I love my country, is that the big corporations are depositing their money in offshore accounts and in other countries. They file some paper saying that they've reincorporated in a particular country that has a very low corporate tax rate, and that's where they put their money, in that bank. It was announced this past week that Pepsi Cola, FedEx, and Procter & Gamble, big American companies, Pepsi Cola, FedEx, and Procter & Gamble, in order to avoid United States taxes, have reincorporated themselves in the little country of Luxembourg in Europe. Luxembourg in Europe. Now, I can't blame them in a certain sense. Corporate taxes are too high in this country. We have the highest percentage or the highest rate of corporate taxes of any of the developed countries. And companies are in business to make money. And why give it to the government if you can give it, you can save it for yourself and put it into an offshore account? What we have to do, and what they're doing is not illegal, because these guys made sure that Congress passed these laws and our president signed them that permitted them to dump their money in another country. What we have to do is drop the corporate tax rate. Nothing wrong with that because it's too high. Drop it. But make the deal that when we drop it, that money that's secreted and sitting in on foreign shores in these bank accounts comes back to the United States to be used in the United States. We need those billions of dollars for infrastructure and everything else. You can put a small tax on that money or no tax. Get that money back in the United States. The money comes back, you get a lower tax rate. Otherwise, screw you, because we're getting screwed. We know that, and this is because it's a terrible thing, politicians today, they run for office, they serve a few terms, they lose or they resign, and they go and they get big jobs with corporate America or with some foreign company. A perfect example is, what's his name? He was the majority leader, Eric Cantor. He got beat in the primary. He resigned 6 weeks after the election. He got a job with some company that does lobbying work, and he's being paid his first year $3.45 million. $3.45 million. There's got to be something wrong with this, because then he uses his influence, which obviously he has with our elected officials in Washington, and goes back and works with them on behalf of the corporate interests who are funding his salary of $3.45 million. I'm going to talk now about Tony Blair, a man I always admired. He was Prime Minister of Great Britain during the time of Bush 2. And everything Bush 2 did with regard to Iraq, Tony Blair was right behind him. And I used to say at the time, he remembers. We saved England's ass in World War II. And they're standing with us on every decision my president is making. Though I didn't agree with the decisions, at least Great Britain, through Blair, was standing with us. Well, you see him occasionally on television now, and to me he's always looked like a businessman. His job is he's a Middle East peace envoy. Middle East peace envoy. Now, what does that mean, and who is he working for? It never came out. It was announced. It was announced this past week, and this is terrible what I'm going to share with you, that Tony Blair in the year 2010 entered into a secret contract with a Saudi oil company. The company is called Petro Saudi. He, not personally, his company. His company is called Tony Blair Associates. It's Tony Blair, whatever way you want to label it. He entered into a contract. They are paying Tony Blair, listen to this, $65,000, not a year, a month. $65,000 a month, and they've been paying him since 2010. Plus, he gets a commission of 2% on any deals he secures for Petro Saudi Oil Company. Now, there's got to be something wrong with that. We've got people that don't even make $65,000 a year anymore in this country. And here he is grabbing $65,000 a month, and he can't be the only fee retainer agreement that's come into his company, Tony Blair Associates. I'm sure there are more like this. And it bothers me, because I also have wondered with regard to some of our presidents, do they do the same thing? It used to be the president was out of office. Either he got beat or he couldn't run again, and he got on an airplane and on inauguration day while the new president was being inaugurated, and he flew home, wherever home was. And he stayed in his hometown, like Truman and where he came from in Missouri. He lived in the family house. Bush, too, is down at his home in Texas. But not all our presidents have done that. And I'm not pointing fingers now, but I wonder, with all this traveling to do, and Clinton's one, Bill Clinton, who I think was one of our great presidents, he's making a ton of money. Does he have contracts like this? I wonder. I don't think it's right. There's something innately wrong about the whole thing. We're going to go to Putin in Russia now. I'm going to phrase this like you're not going to like it. I think this Putin's one smart guy, let me tell you. Let's start with Gorbachev. Remember Gorbachev? He was prime minister of Russia, of the Soviet Union, at the time Reagan was president. They got along. They battled, banged heads, but they got along. And Gorbachev was the one who realized for Russia to survive the Soviet Union, it had to be broken up into little countries. And he's the one who did it. And he was there when the wall came down, the Berlin Wall. I want to tell you something about the Berlin Wall. Two things have impressed me in my life. One, when man walked on the moon. I mean, that blew my mind. Number two was when the Berlin Wall came down. You cannot appreciate, unless you lived through the 1960s, all right, 1970s and 1980s, the war, this Cold War, scared the hell out of all of us. We were always fearful we were going to get bombed with nuclear weapons. They were fearful in the Soviet Union. We were going to bomb then. We were all on the edge of our seats. Everyone had that innate fear, that internal fear. You're worried about yourself and your family, your friends, because it could happen just like that. And especially us in Utica, New York, we lived 14 miles from a SAC base, Griffiths Air Force Base, and that would be the first thing they would eliminate with a nuclear weapon. We'd all be dead. So it was a scary situation, and I never thought that wall would come down. Could not come down. Russia was hard-ass about it. I mean, if anybody tried to take it down, we'd have a nuclear war. It never happened. The wall came down, and that impressed the hell out of me. Which brings me today to Russia. Russia today is not the Russia of yesterday. It was called the Soviet Union yesterday. It was made up of several different countries. Today, Russia is Russia alone. The Ukraine used to be part of it at one time. Albania was part of the Soviet Union. No more. These all became separate nations when the Soviet Union broke up. Well, Putin's getting the crap knocked out of him. It's the only way to put it. He went into the Ukraine. Obama got irritated. Other Western nations became irritated, many in the European Union. So they've imposed sanctions on Putin because he wouldn't pull Russia out of the Ukraine. He keeps sending soldiers in. They're not my soldiers. He lies to us all the time. At least I think he does. And things aren't working properly. And every time you think you got Putin behind the eight ball, he does something and he comes out on top. This guy is terrific. Now, he's a manipulator. He's a bully. But he gets things done the way he wants them. 6 months ago, it was announced that Russia and China had entered into this agreement. It was a 30-year agreement whereby Russia was going to build a gas line into China and supply China with gasoline for 30 years at a fixed price already. He did this while we're punishing him with sanctions. He turns around because gas is the biggest export Russia has. 75% of their economy depends on the exportation of gas. And he's got a new client, China. Oh, my God, what a customer that's going to be. So he got away with it. He did it, and he said to the world, you screwed me. Look what I just did. Now China, who's your enemy too, the free world, the United States, is now my buddy. We're doing business together a big time, okay? They got married. They got married. That's what China and Russia did. And it all came about because of this Ukraine thing that he did. And then we went back at him with sanctions. And now he says, hey, I got a new partner playing with me, China. Well, let me tell you, it was announced this week, okay, that Russia has and China have entered into a new deal. They have entered into a second oil deal, 30-year deal. Another gas line is going to be constructed going from Russia to China, lumping into a different place. Big dollars involved, I forget, $400 billion or something. And again, Putin comes out on top. Two gas lines to China. China needs to import gas. They need petroleum product for their economy. They are desperate for it. They got it knocked. Russia has tons of supply of oil, gas under the ground, and they've now got a big-time customer who's also a big-time danger to us, which I don't like. But he came out on top again, Putin. He came out on top again 6 months later. Which now brings me to Russia and Iran. This was announced today, what I am going to share with you. Russia and Iran. It was announced today that Russia and Iran have signed a new partnership agreement whereby Russia is going to construct, they're going to build 8 nuclear units in Iran. You heard me. Russia is going to build for Iran 8 nuclear units in Iran. This is at a time when we've been negotiating for months with Iran to come up with some kind of a nuclear package that will not create bombs, but will create proper good use, like energy through nuclear use. While we're negotiating, trying to get something done with Iran to limit any bomb making, etc., Russia's in there signing a deal to build them 8 nuclear units. Again, who came out on top? Putin. Smart guy. Got to give him credit. We're going to go to Ferguson now, Ferguson, Missouri. The bomb is going to fall. That's the only way I can describe it. This is my sense. I hope I'm wrong. We're told that a decision will be made soon by the grand jury. The grand jury's decision will be announced. This grand jury should have announced the decision within 2 weeks of the shooting. That's how it's done, okay? They've been screwing around with this with the politicians in Missouri, and it doesn't look good. And if I was a black person living out there, I'd say these people are going to, they killed one of my neighbors, one of my people, and now they're going to screw all of us on the result. Be that as it may, I don't say hang the police officer, but I say, geez, you know, let's put him on trial and find out if he was wrong here. So we've been told that between the middle and end of November by the prosecutor, the decision of the grand jury will be announced. In the meantime, Michael Brown, who was shot and killed, his parents today are in Geneva, Switzerland. They're testifying before a United Nations Human Relations Commission, a United States Human Relations Commission. They're adding fuel to the fire. Now, I can't believe these people had the money or the connections to arrange to go to Geneva, Switzerland, to testify before this UN committee. It had to be arranged by third parties, other persons. But all this is adding fuel to the fire, the delay in the grand jury decision, the folks now going to Geneva to complain. And that's their right, but it adds fuel to the fire. And we've seen the last week, it's been announced publicly, that the police are openly placing military equipment, that stuff they got from the United States government, the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, in strategic positions, those big-type tanks or trucks, the machine guns on top, all kinds of military weapons, etc., because if there is trouble when the decision's announced and the decision says no indictment, they're ready to move in. And then today, the governor of Missouri, I think this guy's, they got strange politicians in Missouri. Harry Truman came from Missouri. They're not his kind. They're not made from his mold today. The governor gets on and says, if there's any trouble, I'm calling in the National Guard immediately. Hey, what's he saying? Piss on you. That's what he's saying to the black people there. My friends who listen to the show and read my blog and newspaper column, generally on a weekly basis, I love them, have written to me and said, if the decision of the grand jury is adverse and does not indict, it'll be open warfare. The town of Ferguson will be burned down. Now, I'm being dramatic. I don't know how bad it's going to be, but there is going to be trouble. And I'm going to tell you this, too. It's not going to be caused by the black people, because the black people have formed themselves. They're organized. They said they're going to walk like Martin Luther King. They're going to walk in peace. But I can see it now, what's going to happen. Some nutty cop, because today many of them are nuts, is going to say, oh, I'm in trouble, and take a shot. And that's it. The end will begin. I want to stay with policemen for another moment, because they're doing all kinds of crazy things, policemen, today in this country. And we've got to be aware of what's happening. We've got to know, because at some point, we need the police. They're an integral part of our society. They're there to protect us, though, not themselves. And they can't do things that are beyond the scope of the law. What am I talking about? We're in Roy, Utah. Excuse me, Roy, Utah. Jose Calzada, 35 years old, he called the suicide prevention hotline, and he said, I'm going to commit suicide. Proper use of the suicide prevention hotline. The suicide prevention people, instead of sending over some expert who's trained to deal with suicidal persons, calls the police. The police send the SWAT team over. Everybody sends a SWAT team over today. You know, you've got several people. They're with all the armor. They're sharpshooters. SWAT teams, okay? They're good, these guys, these SWAT teams. They go in, they kill. That's their job. Not to protect, to kill. Anyhow, the SWAT team goes over. This fellow's in a house all alone. He has no one as a hostage. No one in the house is in danger because there isn't anyone in the house. No one on the street is in danger because the cops got the house surrounded, and he never even shoots. I don't even know if he had a gun. The articles don't tell me. But he never even shot. He's in the house alone, and for 7 hours, the SWAT team's telling him to come out, and he says, no, I'm going to kill myself. At some point after 7 hours, I suspect the police got sick and tired of this, and the first time a SWAT team member could get a shot, they shot the guy. But it wasn't one shot. They shot 5 or 6 times before they killed this Jose Calzada. 5 or 6 times. He's no danger to anyone but himself in that house. Maybe they had to go out that night. One of them had a heavy date. I'm making light of this. I'm making a joke out of it, but it isn't a joke. Now, what makes it worse? Listen to what I am going to say. The police department, in their paperwork afterwards, labeled the shooting as an officer-assisted suicide. An officer-assisted suicide. That's like a doctor-assisted suicide in one of the two states right now where suicide is legal. An officer-assisted suicide. Have you ever heard of anything so disgraceful in your life? Which now brings me to another police situation. New York City, 16-year-old teenager. The police thought that he had some marijuana on him. You know, these cell phones, these videos on businesses in front of a store, inside a store, the videos the police have to carry. In any event, he was pistol whipped. You see on the video camera, one police officer grabs this kid, hits him with his pistol in the head while he's on his knees. Now he's got him on the ground flat after hitting him 3 times in the head. There's a brief interval, and then he goes and he hits him in the head again while he's handcuffed, laying on his stomach, flat on the ground. And then another police officer comes over and slaps him in the head with his hand. This kid's on the ground, handcuffed on his stomach. It was all picked up by a video camera sitting on the front of a business store nearby, picked the whole thing up. I looked at it, disgusting. These cameras say it all. The two police officers already have been indicted in New York City, no screwing around this time, for 2 felonies. And all this happened because the police officers thought he had marijuana on him. Marijuana in many states is no longer a crime now. And eventually it won't be a crime anywhere. Why must they be that brutal when it's just pot? We're letting people out of jail now that have been in jail too long for carrying small amounts of marijuana, seeing the injustice that was done 20 years ago and 10 years ago. I don't understand this stuff. That's the show for tonight, for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed sharing my thoughts with you. I know most of you enjoy hearing them. And I'm happy to hear from you with your comments afterwards. I appreciate that many of you listen to this show during the week, but not now on Tuesday evening. The show is archived. It's on Facebook and YouTube. Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I wrote a book. I keep reminding you, The World Upside Down. It's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. The World Upside Down by Louis Patron. If you like the show, you will like my book. If you don't like my show, you will not like the book. Don't buy it. I thank you again for joining me this week and look forward to chatting with you again next week.